Welcome to Wollongong's local planning panel. We have four items on the agenda, two for decision and two for advice. The first two are for decision. What we will do is we'll hear from applicants and submitters, whoever there are, and we don't have many people to speak tonight. And then we will possibly ask some questions once we've heard from those who wish to speak. And then we will close the meeting. We'll make decisions, recommendations on the advice matters, and those we've posted on the website. Now, we've all declared, or signed, I should say, a conflict of interest documentation, but what I'd like to do is for the record to just go through any conflicts. So,
No conflict.
Sue Francis, no conflict.
Larissa Rozog, no conflict.
Peter Salos, no conflict.
Fantastic. So the first item I have on the agenda is for the Thomas Gibson Park Station Street Thorold for alterations to the grounds, the seating facilities. Do I have Lindsay Hodder?
Yes.
Perfect. Would you like to come forward? And I don't know if these are particularly loud, but I don't know that we have to shout. There's not many here. So.
My name's Lindsay Hodder. I am the president of Thurule Football Club, as in soccer. I'd just like to speak, for the proposal and give you a bit of background too. Like Thurule Junior Football Club, 15 years ago, had about 180 players. In 2019, we've got nearly 700. And we've gone from a junior football... Well, we still are a junior football club, but we have players playing 6 to 17 in under junior football. Then we have going up to all age in men's and women's playing in the Football South Coast District League competition and the amateur competition. So we've got a lot of players. What we as a club have been doing over the years, my background is architecture, so I've produced the development application. And as you can see from the site plan, this is... one thing out of a number of projects that we will see in the future. We have already gained state funding for improvement in the lighting for the fields and a drainage system. We have the funding through the community grants for this project. And, of course, the issue is we've gone from 180 players to nearly 700 with more or less the same facilities. But now we're pushed and extended. We have to have night games. And, of course, night games in the middle of the winter, there's absolutely no protection there. When it rains, not that it rains that often now, absolutely no protection there. So we get wet and soggy. The other end of the spectrum, we have summer football and cricket is played there and there's no protection. So this was our pet idea to get protection, basically, to help the community in general, because it's a community, it's like the village green of Thurule. People walk dogs, run, whatever, and it's just a contribution to the community in general. The building isn't a very pretty building at the moment, just a pretty bland brick building with a concrete roof, which was built in the 60s or 70s, I think. So I can't see that there's any issue with detracting from the building. The other issues that have come up was vandalism, people climbing on the roof. At the moment, we take that very seriously, vandalism, and the fact that we're using the park all the time. The people that we've got... doing the project that we've talked to about giving us the quotes, etc., we've talked to them about making sure that it is vandal-proof as much as possible, in that it'll be strong enough to be trafficable, in fact, even strong enough in the long run to put solar panels on for electricity. So, that's the background, and basically, I think it should be approved.
I don't know if my colleagues have any questions here, but... have you looked at the conditions? Do you have any issues with any of the draft conditions that we put before?
No, I see those conditions as mainly generic conditions that come with every development application.
Does that mean to say that they can't be questioned?
No, well, that's fair enough. But also, I am not, though I have done construction certificates before for things for the club, I'm actually passing on the construction certificate to Spanline, who are the project, going to be the project managers, so that'll be up to them to ask the questions and get the nitty-gritty done, because it'll be their engineers.
I only asked because if there's anything that can be resolved beforehand, it's easier to do it now than after the event. Any questions, panel? No? Thank you. That's great.
Thank you.
And as I said, we'll make a decision after the
meeting. Yes, I understand that, yeah. Thank you.
Don't foresee any problems. Okay, the second item on the agenda is the Bulli Raceway at Princes Highway Bulli relating to the New Year's Eve event. I don't have any registered speakers for this item. Can I just confirm there's no one in the audience for this item? No? Okay, we will move on to item three, therefore, which is Lot 1, Winding Road, Primby. Let me just find this one. And this is an application for a two-storey commercial building, including a fitness centre, swim school, children's recreation facility, potentially pads for fast food restaurants, etc. Now, this is a matter that... that's lucky. Timing's very good, Mr. Wetherill. You're on.
Just in time.
Oh, sorry.
Now, this application is for advice only to the council, but I'd perhaps therefore like to ask Mr. Wetherill, on behalf of the applicant, if he'd like to come and speak to us.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. No, timing's perfect.
I was on the agenda and I thought we'd be here until 8 o'clock.
thanks
for the opportunity. We don't object to the application. We just want some clarifications that... in terms of some of the conditions and some of particularly some of the conditions on the site adjacent to the club. If I could just go to the start. In the description, it says that the site is located at Porkemba Golf Club. That's at 1.4 description. That is not the case. It's adjacent to the golf club. And we made that point to council previously. There's something we don't understand on page 7 and 8 about flood refuge. And if I can quote from the report, the opportunities for redevelopment of the Porkemba Golf Club site that were limited as residential development was proposed. I don't know. We can't comprehend what that means. So someone from council might just give us some clarity on that. We've had a number of pre-lodgements on there, but I still don't understand how that relates to this application. No, it's council's report.
No, it's under the heading of submissions.
Oh, under flood refuge. Okay, sorry, I apologise. The RMS, in their correspondence, say the width of the existing road reserve may present some challenges in providing signalisation of the infrastructure. The club just wants to be assured there will be no costs to the club involved in any of the work associated with the signalisation. I mean, this is an entry to a number of residents and also to the club premises and the golf club, of course. So it was just some clarity that we bear no costs on that.
Hold on. You're going to have to clarify that. This is not an application by the club.
No, I'm just saying, but we the requirements for signalisation and road upgrades, the club doesn't want to be associated with any costs involved with that.
Well, I assume they won't be since it's not their application.
No, I understand that, but just making a point.
Yep.
And also with the drainage design, it seems that the conditions will ensure that there's no impacts on the club's property. There is one issue about the reactive barrier, condition 15 and 54. That barrier is maintained and tested by the golf club. They hold responsibility for that, but we'd like some acknowledgement or insertion that if there were to be damage to the reactive barrier, the rectification costs would not be borne by the club. We've had experiences in the past where that we had to rectify that. It was a consequence of the subdivision that created this lot, and we just want to ensure from this development that we carry nothing forward if there is damage to it.
Standard practice if you damage it. you repair it?
I would hope so, but it's not on their land as such. It's on the club's land, but so it's...
It's adjoining land, adjoining property. Yeah. If you damage it, you...
Well, we just want to make that clear to council that that's the case, because... No. No, but the barrier's on the club land, yes. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the easement's created for the purpose of that drainage, but the point I'm making is that the responsibility for maintenance rests with the club. And if it were to be damaged as a consequence of this development, we don't want to receive any costs as a cost of rectification, that's all. As simple as that.
Sorry, that sounds contradictory. If there is any damage as a consequence of this application, you would be responsible for it?
We would.
Would you not, if you damaged something?
Not, well, I'm not talking about us damaging it. I'm talking about the applicant damaging it, the proponent damaging it.
Sorry, I might be under... Are you acting on behalf of the club?
I'm for the club.
My confusion. That's why I was confused.
Okay.
Right, okay. Now it's all clear.
Okay.
I thought you were for the proponent.
No,
which
I'm
is
for
why
the club.
I was very confused.
Yeah,
okay,
I'm for the club.
Thank you.
So that's just the point we want to make. Yep. I mean, that's... Part of council's aware of that responsibility, but I don't think the planning section's aware of that responsibility, because annually we have to submit a testing program to council's environment section as an ongoing monitoring of the groundwaters between the two properties. Okay, and the only other issue.
Can I just ask you on that? There's two easements shown. Are you referring to the easement on Gulf Place? Because there's two easements on the plans shown. One is within the boundaries of the site, and one is external to the boundaries of the site, which is on your on the golf course.
Yeah, the only reason I raise this is because there was, I think, potential in this application to incorporate landscaping within the area where that reactive barrier is. That's been withdrawn. The landscaping has been withdrawn. But we just want to make a point, whatever happens in terms of the construction, that we're not responsible for the damage.
I can understand the dilemma. You've got an arrangement with council which makes you responsible for the testing and the maintenance of the wall.
Correct.
Now that this piece of land is being sold off, there's a section of that wall which is no longer effectively under your control.
No. We're still responsible for...
I know you're responsible, but in terms of its exposure to potential damage, it's no longer up against your property.
That's correct.
It's up against someone else's property, and they could damage it, but you think your legal arrangement with the council makes you responsible.
Correct.
That's your view.
That's your view.
That's a legal problem that has to be resolved. That's, we can't do that. That's something that has to be one-way conditioned or something.
Yes, that's the point. I think it should be conditioned. What that might be, I think it's appropriate to be conditioned.
It'd be like having a dilapidation survey, wouldn't it?
Yes, Scott.
It's more than that.
Well,
you need to know the state of that play before construction, and you need to know the state of play after.
Correct.
And if there's damage, you're not responsible.
Correct.
Somebody else is.
Yes,
and that's probably something that can be included as a condition.
Yep.
Is that what you're suggesting?
Yep. Thank you. And one more thing we have is really about condition 66. This requires an effective evacuation report and procedure to be submitted to the principal certifying authority. We would have thought that would be done, but the point we need to make, if there's a likelihood of potential for that evacuation plan to involve the club, obviously we need some dialogue about that. Why I bring that up, because when we were talking about potential for development on the club site, the evacuation plan would have been obviously through the club site to the north to RMS lands. So if there is a passage we need to ensure that there's dialogue with the club to get agreement to that evacuation plan. The only other thing we should bring up is really about the retaining walls and fencing from the retaining walls. Obviously, I'll just raise this on behalf of the club. They don't want to be involved in any costs as a consequence of those constructions. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. And were there any questions?
Okay, good. Thank you, Chair. Scott, you well?
So I have Anthony El Hazouri to speak. No?
Yes?
Please come forward.
My apologies. Sorry, I thought we had a bit of extra time.
Quick and the dead here.
Pardon?
Quick and the dead.
Very efficient. Sorry, so if there was anything that I needed to address from any of the submissions that I missed while I was outside, I'm happy to do so. So I'm Anthony Olazuri from the applicant in relation to item 3, Windang Road, Primby. The general theme of the report we obviously agree with, recommending approval of the application. The key issues council's highlighted, we would like to address the panel on, so we take our own view on that, and that that generally relates to the noise and security issues relating to the proposed 24/7 trade of the Pad A, Pad B fast food sites and the
condition of consent?
Well, the condition of consent that prohibits the 24/7. We proposed
which condition don't you like?
Well, it's the general recommendations in the report. So our proposal originally was for 24/7 trade.
Yeah, I know.
And the general issues noted on page 2 of the report talk about the noise, security and amenity impacts of 24-hour operation of the fast foodies and the fitness centre. Council's recommended 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. and then said basically come back as if you want anything beyond that and provide an acoustic assessment. The acoustic assessment was provided to council on the basis of 24/7 trade for all three sites. And the acoustic assessment found that the site could operate within the environmental planning out requirements under the current arrangements for 24/7. They included the only real amelioration by way of built form that was required was a fence along the drive-through of Pad A. Now, subsequent to our application being submitted, there was a lot of back and forth with council officers as to the type of fencing along the Golf Place facade and the type of fence that could be from a planning perspective. Council contacted our acoustic engineer and asked for further information as to if you were to reduce the height of that fence, could you still operate 24/7? If not, what would the scenario be? I'm not sure if council's been if the panel's been provided with that information. The result of that inquiry was that we could reduce the fence height facing Golf Place from 1,800 to either 1,500 or 1,200, which would reduce the amenity impact or the perceived visual impact. We also advised council that we would agree to that fence or that acoustic wall being the type by way of a green wall. It's going to be landscaped in front of it anyway, but if the issue was visual impact, then we were happy to ameliorate that by way of a green wall, which provides an attractive elevation, but it could also have been reduced in height and still allow for 24/7 trade of Pad A. Pad B and Pad C, Pad B and the gymnasium had absolutely nothing to do with that fencing in relation to 24/7 trade. Now, council raises the issue of amenity impacts beyond noise, and they talk about septet issues as well. We accept that, and we accept that, you know, that eventually a plan of management needs to be put in place prior to an occupation certificate relative to each specific user. But instead of essentially blanketly saying we don't support it, because essentially, well, to be perfectly honest, it's a bit of a difficult one. It asks for an acoustic report that that demonstrates 24/7 operation can work, but at a later stage. Yet at this stage, we've provided one that demonstrates that. There's been no reason or information provided to the contrary as to why that report's not sufficient. And we have no objection to a condition requiring a plan of management prior to occupations of each of those uses. In any event, councils condition the fit-out of each of those uses to be a separate DA anyway. But the fact of the matter is that we've provided sufficient information to demonstrate that 24/7 trade is an acceptable outcome on the site. To, I guess, restrict those hours now and say essentially come back later, I think has a detrimental impact as to what type of user you will eventually get on this site.
Perhaps I can stop you now, because I think this is where we as a panel are confused.
Okay.
Because we've got approval of an architectural solution for an end user we don't know. The number of, for example, let me just go to the kids' recreation facility.
Mm-hmm.
For 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, or 14-year-olds?
Sure.
Question mark. Different, totally different dynamic in terms of parking demands and generation and movement of vehicles. Likewise for a swim school. Swimming pools, you can't do it by area. Parking can't be done by area on that basis. It's a function of how many people use it. Swim schools for 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 10-year-olds, you know, the pool is cut up into a dozen lanes and they're 20-minute lessons. So you've the turnover and churn of kids is not something that I can see has been considered. And the problem you are leaving us with is big questions, particularly since you want the particular use approved, but we don't have details of the use.
So the question was raised early on in the application, and we did furnish council with information on particular uses, the age groups of certain kids. So the question you asked about kids' recreational facility, for example, age groups, etc. It was an RFI council requested, and it was provided several months ago. So I will get it. So essentially, it was up to 12-year-olds. Now, the reason we define it, so just to from a use perspective, what we define as a kids' recreational facility, and it's a difficult one because it's technically under the controls, they're all defined as indoor recreational facilities. So what we try to do is not simply give a bit more information relating to the proposed user, but there's still all the blanket terminology is still indoor recreational facility for the permitted use.
We do understand this.
Yep.
We understand planning legislation, we understand the law, we understand what the permissible use is. We're not saying it's not permissible. What we're saying is to assess it properly, given the nature of the use, it needs, because an indoor recreation facility can be, you know, a sports, just an indoor open sports facility, multi-use purposes. But this, it would appear, is a unique provision, and what we're asking for is specific details. Now, do you have an end user?
Of the kids' recreational facility, for example. No, not at the moment.
Okay,
not a specific end user.
I think this is half of the problem.
Yeah.
You want approval for something specific, but you don't have an end user for it, and we can't assess the nature of the assessment, or rather, we have a lot of open questions about this is approval. Yeah, absolutely.
Just like a good example might be the proposed site layout plan.
Yes.
Has a parking schedule attached.
Yes.
It's very precise.
Yes.
In that it goes through the different uses. And it's got a requirement, and you've got then a total required number, and you have a provided on-site number which matches that.
Yes.
What I'm not sure of, what the panel's not sure of, is in how did you arrive at the required number? Yes. Because we need to know, or I'd like to know, as to whether or not that assessment was, you know, what was based on, and is it realistic, or what have you taken into account? The sorts of things that the chairman's just raised then. Food and drink outlets, you know, maybe you can work that out, you know. Maybe the fitness centre, there's a floor area for that fitness centre, but you've got a required rate for that.
Yes.
Talk to us about all that so we're confident that it matches.
Yep, of course. So the a traffic report was prepared by Colston Budd, Rogers and Cafes. That detailed, for example, the drive-in and takeaway food outlets, talked about number of seats, the drive-through capacity. So the criteria for parking for the food sites is a function of the number of seating inside and out and the drive-through. So that's all articulated in there. That's on... Correct. The
so just on that,
yes.
So the food outlets
yes.
could be conditioned to a total maximum number of seats.
Of course, and it's actually noted on the plan and it's noted in the description. The fitness centre is a function of its area. The guidelines for parking are a function of a fitness centre's area, nothing else. There are the guidelines in the RMS Guide to Traffic Generating Development, as well as those in Council's DCP, are a function of a rate per square metre for fitness centres.
So if I do my maths, the fitness centre is on 676. You've got a requirement of 20, which works out 1 per 33.8 square metres. Is that what the DCP says?
Correct. So if I take you to... I'm not sure if you have a copy of the traffic report in front of you.
No.
Okay, so the traffic report, and I'm happy to hand this up, actually outlines, based on traffic generation per square metre, parking per square metre of each use... We annex, and I'll apologise for my handwriting, but we annex the comprehensive report as well as the amending letter when the plans were amended subsequent to the change from childcare centre to fitness centre that amended the parking requirements as well. Mm-hmm. So all those requirements, we have set them down in terms of specifics. And we have gone at the minimum number of parking spots. So we haven't sought to seek dual user or anything like that. So the indoor recreation facility standard, regardless of whether it's used for kids or for older persons, has a general rate per square metre. And that's what we've used.
We understand this, and that's why we have problems, because this is not a generic... fitness centre or a recreation facility, is it? It is a small children's under 12 recreation facility. Probably, let's just use generically, it might be a ball party room. That would fit within the category. Now, those usually are places where children are brought by their parents in a vehicle for parties that run every 45, every hour, whatever the time. I don't know. This is the lack of information. And the turnaround of vehicle of users of their parking spaces is a little bit more than you just drive and park and then use the facility to come away. It's a very different dynamic. Everyone needs to be driven. It's not a generic... you can't use a generic provision. So was that all considered in the traffic report?
Yes.
Or was just the standard figure from the DCP used?
So the specific uses are outlined in the traffic report. The traffic report then goes on to analyse in the parking provisions and in the rates, and I'm happy to hand this up, in the rates for going and coming, so vehicles entering and exiting the site, based on the specific uses. He doesn't identify the entire thing as recreational facility indoor. He's broken it down in between fitness centre, neighbourhood shop, kids recreational facility, swim school, kids recreation facilities.
You haven't answered my question. You've used the generic parking requirement for a indoor recreation facility without detail, unless you can tell me to the contrary, without detailing the unique nature of such of these facilities for kids' recreation.
Yes. So I understand you're calling it generic, but the point is that that none of the DCP or controls.
I can tell you a traffic consultant does not need a DCP to be able to write a traffic...
No, I'm not saying that he needs one. What I'm saying is that he has assessed it. You're asking me if we've used a different control. I'm saying he's assessed it as a kids' recreational facility. He's come to the conclusion in his report that the rates, that the parking rates are per that.
You are asking for a specific number of cars for a specific function. You don't have a tenant, so how do you know that you're going to get that tenant? What happens if you get another tenant with a different set of uses that requires a different parking solution?
Yes.
And at the moment, we don't know, and from what you're telling us, you don't know either.
Well, it's not that I don't know what the use is going to be, but I will answer your first part of your question first. The conditions of consent require that each of these uses anyway are furnished with a development application separately. So, in essence...
But we know that's not able to be done. The uses will be approved by this consent.
The uses will be approved by the consent?
Correct.
Yes, but what I'm contemplating is that if what the gentleman is saying, that it needs to be something else, then it would require further approval.
No, I think what we're saying is you have asked for a very specific use.
Okay.
And if that specific use is approved, that specific use is approved.
Yes.
And everything else that you have sought, and you don't need to change it.
No, so on the specific uses...
But we don't know enough about the specific use, okay. And nor do you.
Well, what I'm saying is that in terms of, I think if we're narrowing it down to the kids' recreational facility
and
the swim school, in terms of those two, if the panel's so minded that those two don't have specific information about them, I'm happy for those uses not to be approved. But what we gave, what council sought early on was some indication in relation to the use. Now, we gave that. Now, I don't talk about commercial realities. A complex such as this is not going to have every single tenant pre-committed. One of the fundamentals behind that is because of the fact that if we pre-commit them on one basis and that doesn't occur, then you've just wasted a whole lot of time.
But that's what you're asking us to do now.
Well, no, not necessarily, because ultimately the use that we're seeking could go to multiple operators on the circumstances council ultimately approves. If what you're saying is that the specific use of kids' recreational facility we haven't furnished enough information on, despite the information we've given council previously, not the generic use, so be it. But what we're saying is that in terms of things like the food and beverage premises, things like the fitness centres, all of those things we think we have given intricate amount of information on, down to seating numbers, especially in relation to the fast foodies. In relation to the, I guess, subcategories of use, so not the general indoor recreation facilities, subcategories of use, again, those subcategories of uses have been articulated in all the reports put before council. So when the experts have actually determined what the demand is on parking and the demand is generally, they're not talking generics, they're talking specific uses. So I can't talk to from their report they say that those specific uses are demanding X amount of parking, will drive X amount of vehicles in and out of the site at any particular point in time. So it's not like, for example, the traffic report said indoor recreational facility for these three boxes and made no mention of the specific underlying uses that we're seeking. They do specifically deal with the kids' recreational facility, the swim school, etc. So they have used those specific uses to form their conclusion as to parking demands. So to that end, I think, yes, there is definitely that information is available and is sufficient. In terms of whether the subcategory of uses, the panel is minded that there is insufficient information on. I believe we've provided information on the type of use and the specific use, and ultimately the fit out of these must come back to council, because ultimately the zoning doesn't permit CDC development to occur. So a condition requiring development application is entirely...
Why does the zoning not allow it?
It's SP1.
Isn't it the use that allows...
Under my interpretation of the CDC legislation, it's not just the use, it's also the underlying zone which must... The CDC, and correct me if I'm wrong, I understand in the initial schedule of CDC there's a list of zonings that call up the CDC and then thereafter the use. As I understand it, and hence why we have gone through this process in the manner in which we have, is to give some clarity around the use generally, and then the fit out of things like the kids' recreational facility, the gym, etc., will occur at DA stage.
Can I just ask? Sorry. So one of the issues we've probably got, as you can see, is we're trying to minimise conflict parking and we're trying to minimise impact in general. So, and maybe the report before us doesn't have the information or all the information. You've put in specifics on, for example, let's just say the swim school, in terms of how that's to be operated. How many kids, what are your hours of operation, how many staff? Have you gone to that detail?
No. So what we've done is we've basically spoken about the hours of operation. We've spoken about the nature of the use. We've spoken about the intended user, all of those things, the size of the overall use. But one of the fundamentals we spoke of very early on was the fact that, given the nature of the site, the specifics of each box would be dealt with individually, subject to a future development application to council.
Yeah, it's only the fit out that comes back, not the use. Would already be approved.
But the fit out is what dictates
our problem is the intensity of that use,
sure.
And it's not. I think it needs to be regulated. So,
okay.
For some reason, we would need to be comfortable that you, at any one time, have 50 children in that spot between these hours. So we can then look at intensity. Car parking may be separate. Car parking may be only calculated on that area. We understand that. But then that's where you've got to correlate. Okay, that we're going to minimise the conflicts, that we're not going to get a Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, 300 people piling in here because we've got no restrictions on the amount of people. We've just said, yes, it can be a kids' facility, and your operator is going to have 20 parties at the one time between 10 to 20 because you've got the capacity to do that. So that's the problem we have, is the conflicts and the intensity that this could generate, and we don't have conditions that are appropriately going to look at that. You know, we could deal with the parking and your numbers, maybe that's something, but it's the intensity it's generating that I think we've got an issue with. And we didn't have any numbers here, so you might have provided some other numbers, but we don't have that. That's where our concern is for the area, I suppose, you know, and how to minimise that and regulate it through this DA.
And the other thing is you've provided architecturals for an end user who may have corporate styling that may not use that architectural solution.
So are we talking about the pad sites? You're right, but ultimately the corporate nature the type of user we're going for, and the pad sites we do have users for, but in terms of, we were talking earlier about the occupants of the kids' recreational facility, the users in relation to the pad sites we do have users for, and it's not like a McDonald's or anything where they've got a very specific style that they're going for these days. Essentially, the main criteria we had from our end user of the pad sites was a function of the area of indoor versus outdoor area, the length and the type of the drive through, hours of operation, the number of parking spots relative to their pad, etc. So all of that has been taken into account on specific end user. So that has definitely been taken into account. Where we're talking about end user was in relation to your kids' facility, and that I think is a very difficult thing to, at this point, say to someone, you've got the ability to do X, Y, and Z. I had understood the condition in relation to the specific development applications for some of these uses to go beyond what the panel's saying. Ultimately, you know, I take your point in relation to those two uses. I think there's definitely sufficient information outside of the kids' recreational facility and the swim school. But, my understanding was that they would come back, that would essentially come back because of the nature of the site. You would come back, lodge an application. The fit out would then dictate things like occupancy levels, etc., because of the fact that, that's typically,
you would have to match that to your available car parking because you can't reproduce more.
Correct, and that's what that's what it would be. Which again is not an uncommon circumstance. It's like, for example, when you get an approval for a shopping centre. In a shopping centre scenario, you don't know every single specialty tenant's use,
fair enough.
And it's a function of the fact that yes, you've got a fixed number of parking spots. Should someone want to put something that requires triple the parking, then that's a control that needs to be met.
Yeah, but you accept. That's the case.
Of course.
Yes.
And that's the point. And that's why quite extensive work went into working. That's why we didn't come here and say we just want a building. Or by the same token, it would also be antipathetic to come here and say we want this particular fit out. Because ultimately, with the end user comes specifics. And with the fit out, that also dictates the capacity requirements. For example, if council's approving a fit out, and the application for that fit out comes in and shows, I don't know, the capacity for 100 kids, and that wouldn't work with the parking there, then that would be obviously not approved. It's that's how I viewed this occur because it's sorry.
One of the associated issues with that then is the allocation of these spaces because you've got a quantum and you've got an allocation. How does that work in here? Because you do. Well, because there are different users.
Yes.
Have some different demands.
Yes.
People get territorial about their spaces. How's that going to work? And as a follow-on, you're talking about a staged development, but which is not a staged application in under the terms of the Act. Yeah. So, yeah. Just talk about that allocation first, I suppose, of these spaces.
Sure.
How's that
going to
work?
So, we looked at this in two ways. We looked at it as whether they are used all at once in a completed all together in a completed development, because we're not seeking subdivision. We're not looking to have these things sold off separately or anything like that. So it'd always be available communally. However, what we did look was the practicality of it. So we made sure that the required number of parking spots adjacent to each food premises was sufficient, which it is. And then we looked at the number of parking spots adjacent to building C being sufficient for the users in that building. But also that on an aggregate, they would also be sufficient together. So it's not like we need, you know, we're not saying that's, you know, we're providing 10 out of 25 car spots for the foodie in Pad A and we're going to expect people to park up in building C. The parking allocations were done whilst not strictly that you can't, if you're in building C, park next to building A, but the availability of parking adjacent to each use was sufficient for its use based on the guidelines. So that's how we saw that working out. It's quite a, quite a practical solution. You've got, you know, the required number of parking spots adjacent to each entry point for each use, and also there are links, pedestrian links, between each of those parking areas to facilitate use across them as well.
Did Council discuss with you submitting a stage DA?
And what for what purpose?
For the purpose of getting your approval for your uses established and the location of your envelopes established, and then which conditions could be attached for any subsequent DAs that would be submitted in relation to each of the details. So, and then those applications have to be consistent with the concept approval. At the moment, you just want everything approved. And we don't have enough information. In my mind, there is not enough information for that.
Okay.
But if you had a staged application, you could have had envelopes, you could have had the uses, the conditions could have then limited those uses, and then you could come back with individual DAs for your...
So a couple of things in relation to that. Firstly, in relation to something like Building C, that wouldn't work because of the fact that it's multi-levelled. So essentially you'd need... You couldn't, for example, come back with different uses at different times for Building C unless it's in the method that we've proposed here, in that you come back for your fit-out application at different points in time, because essentially it's like saying we could build upstairs without downstairs. It wouldn't be practical. In terms of the pad sites, we have what we feel is sufficient information to actually have those approved as part of this overall development. The way we viewed this was in some ways that it was staged to an extent, that council had certainty around use but also had control over specific nature of the two slightly less known users by way of the conditions proposed. So we actually saw it in that manner. In terms of the food pad sites, I couldn't imagine any further detail being required at a later stage for council to be satisfied in relation to that, nor for the fitness centre, other than for a fit-out application. I take your point in relation to the other two users, but again, that's how I had envisaged it, that essentially at this point in time, we've got built form consent, there's certainty about the built form, there's certainty about the type of use, therefore there can be a proper assessment done on the nature of the demand, etc. And then in terms of specific user of their fit-out, for the purposes of Building C, they would come back and provide a fit-out application at that point in time. Now, council's taken it one step further from my reading in the conditions and still requires all the users to come back and put in a specific fit-out application again, which so be it, even though there are in our mind detail in that, but we've got no objection to that. What we felt like is slight to what you said, except one of the pieces of advice we got at the beginning was council doesn't approve concepts. So we couldn't actually give council and say this is a concept and then we'll come back with each use later. Council made it clear that they won't approve a concept. So well, that was one of the initial... Yeah, and so when it... But the problem with that is, though, it goes to your point earlier in terms of parking demand. If there's no... If you don't nominate a use at the... Call it even a concept stage, right? You're talking about a building and people come back and do their applications later. There would be some form of approval at that point, something that gives the building a use... And yes, you come back later for specific approvals, for fit out and specific uses potentially, but there's still some form of underlying approval there. Otherwise, it becomes a building of an innominate use.
That's what a stage DA is for. That's specifically, sorry, Peter, that's specifically what a stage DA is for. You establish your envelopes, you establish how the site can work. You can nominate to build nothing in your first stage. You can nominate to put your parking in your first stage. You can nominate to build one building in your first stage and have details for it. But then every other application comes in subsequently. What I'm concerned with, for example, and I don't understand quite what the conditions say, there are traffic lights required, are there not?
Yes.
When are they going to be built?
So as I understand it from our discussions with RMS, prior to the, we have to enter into a binding deed prior to CC.
Which CC?
Prior to the first CC. We'd have to be prior to the first CC. As I understand it, typically when council uses the word prior to a CC...
So you're happy for the it means the first one.
Yeah, that's of course.
So without any tenants for anything else, you want to say, for example, build your driveway or your car parking, you've got to put the traffic lights in.
We have to bind ourselves to put the traffic lights in. So that's the first part. So the RMS conditions...
And then occupation.
Yes.
Which occupation certificate? The first occupation certificate.
Correct. And we have no objection to that because ultimately we understand that the traffic demand for this development requires those to occur. We went to RMS with the design before being asked to do it. Our traffic analysis came back saying in order for any development really to occur, you need these traffic lights at this intersection upgrade. We proposed that intersection upgrade as part of the application in the first instance. So we understand that that needs to occur and that's our understanding of it.
One final question from me, flooding, off-site flooding implications. So the site probably is not going to flood, but what about off-site flooding caused but as a consequence of the structures, the concreting, and potentially this acoustic wall that may occur?
So the site itself is above the PMF. In terms of flood storage... We have compensatory flood storage on site. So anything that we've, any storage of flooding or overland flow that we've taken away, we have compensated on site. So council required us to provide a compensatory storage calculation plan, which demonstrated pre and post development flood storage impacts. And the second thing, and goes to your point about off-site impacts, is we were required to provide an on-site detention system to demonstrate that the pre and post development flows in the PMF event would not lead to any increased flooding on the site or outside the site, which was not a was not an easy threshold to meet, but it was met. Yes, there was one done. So there was a BMT did the report, and then our stormwater engineers did the plans. They went back and forth with council multiple times. We met with council, and they were finalised recently. And they form part of the conditions of consent.
So you've got an OSD tank.
Correct. OSD tank under the driveway. I'm not sure if you've got... There's a full hydraulic and stormwater plans. There's a flood assessment report. There's a stormwater management plan. There's WSUD, water-sensitive urban design measures. This is an extremely comprehensive application that made up this development application. No, I understand. But they are
seeking advice. We just didn't get the report and plans. And so we just...
So just for the panel's benefit, a lot of that is dealt with in the conditions to do with, so for example, condition 64, 65, 66, 68, 69, And then at the beginning, so they're post, they're prior to OC, and then general conditions, for example, condition 45, 44 deal with flooding and OSD measures. 43, 42, all are quite, there's, the conditions are comprehensive, but that, those conditions go even further in relation to referencing under the approved plans and specifications, condition one. They deal with all the measures we just discussed, and they refer to all the, you know, for example, you've got the proposed finishes levels and retaining wall levels, the, where is it? Yeah, all the floor plans, everything done by TFA group, they're all there and they're all referenced. And like I said, that was quite a rigorous process. So, and the,
just,
the,
just on that, the report says that in the, with the removal of the childcare centre, the evacuation for flood, I've got to find that, was improved. But did the report go to the nature of the children and their supervision or lack thereof in relation to the swimming pool and the kids' recreation facility?
Yes. So in relation to, in relation to the evacuation, to give you a bit of context to the evacuation here, the roads are only, the road that connects the subject site to the rest of the area is only cut off in the 1 in 1,000 year event. So it's the PMF.
Yep.
And it's cut off for, because it's a slow rising flood, you have a 6-hour window to evacuate. So this isn't a rapidly rising flood, so it's not one where people can be caught out. So essentially, with the childcare centre, council took the view, which we don't necessarily agree, but council took the view that even though it's a 1 in 1,000 year event, that, and even though you do get a 6-hour window to evacuate from the early warning to the time that the roads become closed, the site's never inundated. It's purely access on one side of Primby Bypass. Because of the fact that children are there and only supervised by, you know, roughly one per five kids, one staff member per five kids, and it's on a prolonged period, then that was not suitable. But in relation to a kid's recreational facility, the period of stay is not 8 hours or 6 hours. It's, you're talking short stay. The, in any event, if there was ever a flood event that triggered the PMF, this, you would have this, you would have basically evacuation occur readily, where there was, you know, you've got 3-4 hours in order to do it. Like I said, our evacuation report in fact supported the childcare centre and was of a childcare centre could evacuate. In relation to the kids' recreational facility, much smaller stays, much more greater window in order to be evacuated, and the nature of the use isn't such that you're going to have a problem with reuniting parents with kids, etc. So that did go into that. That was a report, and that was amended on the final use as well.
Any other questions?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, the last item we have is 49 to 51 Park Street, Helensburgh, which is the changing hours to the service station. I have three submitters to speak. Thank you. The first person is Gregory O'Driscoll.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen of the panel. My main concern is, as is mentioned in the recommendations, noise pollution associated with the operation of the petrol station. There were DA amendments made to this service station in the past, allowing it to operate from 5 a.m. until 9 p.m. but no deliveries before 8 a.m. and none after 6 p.m. That's worked very well in my opinion. However, there's been flagrant breaches of those operating hours with the fuel tankers. On numerous occasions I've had to go out at 2 a.m, 3 a.m. and reiterate to the drivers that they are not allowed in there until after 8 a.m. They've muffled their reverse sirens, which is illegal, and I've pointed that out to them. I've told them to speak to their the owner. It's a small operation. The owner of those tankers, I think he has two, perhaps three, supplies that petrol station and another couple down the coast here into Wollongong. Now, one of the things the applicant is addressing here is flexibility of delivery. It's flexible for those petrol tankers because they can unload at Helensburg and then continue down the coast. I understand that. I've driven trucks. I understand the movement of freight and all that sort of stuff. However, given the behaviour of these operators in the past, I don't trust them to come in at a suitable time. Nowhere in the application does it address volumes of customers. And I can tell you from living across the road from that place for 19 years, there are peak periods, and they are about from between 6 a.m. and 8 a.m. and probably 5 p.m. and 7 p.m. If you get a petrol tanker coming in those hours, it's a very busy road, Park Street. They call it a road. It's an arterial road, essentially, now. There's about 6,000 people live in Helensburg. It's a 50-kilometre road, but a lot of people don't adhere to that. The tankers need to reverse in. There's very limited room for them to reverse in. And I just don't think it's safe on those grounds if the hours are extended before 8 a.m. and after 6 p.m. I really don't. They're better off coming in the middle of the day when it's the quietest on Park Street and there's less cars in the petrol station. And just on the noise front as well, if you've ever heard a gas bottle truck delivering gas bottles, I'm talking the 9 kilo ones, it is metal on metal. It is extremely loud. We've had double glazed windows put in because of the elevated noise level coming from that petrol station. It is still very loud. The noise just travels. And it's particularly more so at night when there's less traffic volume around. It's very quiet. It is extremely loud.
Have you seen the suggested conditions?
Yes, I have.
So they're suggesting delivery of goods, of which gas bottles would be goods, between 6 a.m. and 8 p.m.
Yes.
So that's not in the middle of the night. Is that what you're suggesting is okay?
I believe that is a sensible suggestion. It is mainly if they deliver. I thought that was delivering before that, 5 a.m.
It's 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. and on Monday to Saturday and 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sunday and public holidays. That's the condition, recommended condition.
Okay. But the petrol tankers
tankers is recommended 6 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Yep.
Weekdays, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Saturdays and 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Sundays and public holidays. What you're saying in relation to the fuel is that you think it would be better if they didn't start until after 8?
Yes.
And
excluded
the 5 to 7 period?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. And in regards to the operating hours of the shop itself, I'm concerned about the 11 p.m. closure. It's Coles supermarket is open from 8 a.m. till 10 p.m. Monday to Fridays. Monday to Saturday, 9 p.m. on a Sunday night. The convenience store that they mentioned would only be, I would suggest, for maybe cigarettes.
Milk.
Really?
Milk.
I don't think so.
It's always milk.
Yeah.
It's always milk.
Beg your pardon? Well, you mentioned food. Ultimately, if they get an 11 p.m. opening, they can sell anything in that shop. We get a lot of intoxicated people walking up the street from the hotel and the club. If that place is open till 11 o'clock, there's going to be a hell of a lot of noise out there, I can tell you. Not only that, these operating hours will go into all the apps that people read and be redirected into the town at that time of night. As it is, I've already helped out at least a half a dozen people with petrol because they've been directed in there thinking that the petrol station was open until 10 p.m, which the previous tenant was doing illegally. And they're not, according to council's regulations with petrol stations, then that, particularly that one, it's not allowed to advertise outside of the township to bring people into the town. I'm very concerned about the late opening. And I know we can't address traffic management in this hearing, but I would like to say it's a very busy road. It's hard to get in and out of our driveways. The petrol tanker has a lot of difficulty reversing into that site. And I can just see it making it harder and harder for us to get in and out of our driveways if he's there in the peak periods. I really do. And that, at the intersection there with Lilyvale Street, there's been a number of accidents there. You have poor visibility coming up Lilyvale Street from the east. If you're looking to the right, they have a gas bottle sign. You can't see what's coming up the road. I just think it's very dangerous. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Peter McMoore?
Thanks for giving me the chance to speak. I should say, first off, I'm not an expert in local planning or anything like that. I live exactly opposite the service station. I've got a very young family and another baby on the way. So when you're speaking about swimming pools and parking earlier, I know exactly about that, but not local planning. I gave a written submission, so I'll keep this short. My main concerns, which I think are overlooked by the council officer's final recommendations, are around noise, safety and traffic management, and also the terms of the needs of such a facility. Firstly, in terms of noise, my understanding of the acoustic report was it was based on a lot of assessments, particularly around how deliveries are done at the site. They used an assessment saying that the truck's only on site for 15 minutes, operating at an idle speed of 94 decibels. Doing your research off the internet, because again, I'm not an expert in noises either, that 94 decibels would be an assumption based on a very new truck, and that's not the type of vehicles that operate at the site, which is mentioned by the previous speaker. They are older vehicles, and the manoeuvre the truck has to do to get into the site, these are heavy vehicles, has to block the entire two lanes of traffic, reverse, sometimes come up my driveway, and then reverse into the site, blocking the road. The driver does that by himself with no safety or traffic management to assist him. It causes a huge impact as it is during the day. My background is I've got 17 years of policing behind me, and my concern around these vehicles, if they try to do this at night, you're increasing a safety risk where you've got darkened roads, people who do speed. Helensburgh, unfortunately, has had a number of fatalities. It's put it on the radar for the state recently, over the last year, that is, on the roads. People do speed around that road. If it's at night and you've got a massive tanker full of fuel blocking the road, the noise from that, firstly, just to go back to that issue, is deafening and directly impacts my front windows where my family are trying to sleep. I don't think the acoustics took that into account, the manoeuvre the truck has to do. But the second one on terms of that is the safety of that truck trying to reverse into the road, into
which,
that site.
Sorry, which street? Are you in Parks?
Or I'm in Parks,
you're in
134.
134.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you say it reverses into the
into
property,
the site
from Parks.
So it comes down, it comes northbound, if you're looking at the map, towards the train station, just to give you some bearings. It'll then stop and swing across the both lanes of the road to pull itself. I'm trying to picture this. It reverses parallel to Lilyvale Street virtually. West to east, that's the best description you can give. So it has to fully block the road and then reverse into the site.
From Lilyvale?
From Parks.
From Parks.
Yeah, across the main road.
Okay.
So to address that for noise, that's not just a truck sitting there idling, and it's not a 15-minute manoeuvre to empty a full fuel tanker of fuel. So I think the noise acoustics report's very flawed in that fact, that it's going to be taking significant longer amount of time, a much larger impact on the noise and the environment. I'm happy to have a look at a map and show you how it does it if you want.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to check whether you were Lilyvale or Parks.
One of those things, when you watched it happen for 6 years, it's easy to visualise, hard to explain.
No, that's fine.
The truck, the noise that's going to be caused by that is significant. And at night, my family won't be able to sleep through that, just pure and simple. At 10 o'clock at night, if it comes, I'd picture it'd have to come at 9:30 to be off-site by 10 o'clock just to get the full job done. That's a significant amount of impact on my family and impact on my neighbours and the other residents in the area. So So I'd be suggesting that the field deliveries remain as they are at the moment during the day, because during the middle of the day, the whole town's essentially a commuter town where we travel away to work. There's little traffic on the road and it can be performed safely. On that note, I know it's not the correct forum, but in terms of traffic management, I found the recommendations from the council didn't... I think it made a comment in there that the application is for opening hours only, and as such, there's not a traffic management issue. But by virtue of them wanting to bring heavy vehicles into the town late at night, I think that creates a situation where it is a traffic management issue.
It's not a matter we yeah. control as the panel.
Yeah, I understand that, and I recognise it's not the forum
there's
to
no
raise it in.
There's no restriction on the road rules about what vehicles can travel on the road. So.
Yeah. Well, on that note, other industries in the town don't operate the heavy vehicles at night. There's a coal mine in the town. They only operate between 7 and I think it's 5, and outside of that, they bring in the heavy vehicle, special categories to bring vehicles in there. So outside of noise, safety and traffic management, in terms of the needs for a facility like this to open later, the previous speaker addressed it. We have a Coles in town that opens to 10 p.m. It's very quiet at night. You've got your milk, your cigarettes and everything there that people can get. I don't see that there will be the customer flow for it, and I know there's no sort of example of what sort of customer increase they're expecting to create. In terms of fuel, we're only 15 minutes away from a 24-hour service station. Which is, it's a funny point that people are actually directed off our highway to come to this service station, where if they kept us driving straight to Heathcote, there's a 24-hour service station simply there, all ready to go. So I don't think there's a need for people to be filling up at night either. I think the proposal is more about that flexibility for their delivery arrangements, which is...
Well, we'll ask the applicant.
Yeah.
Nice. Should I just get clarification where you are? You're
134, so exactly opposite the service station. Yep.
And the house adjacent to the one.
Yep. Thank you.
That's correct. Yeah, so that's 23 Lily Vale Street, I think.
Lily Vale, that's Lily Vale. This is Parks.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one opposite Parks. Nicole Lennon. Perhaps you could answer some of the questions that have been posed.
I didn't actually hear too many questions. Mainly they were comments about...
Well, respond to the comments then.
Yes, okay. So the panel would be aware... Thank you for having me here today. The panel would be aware that the history of this application came about from a compliance issue. There was a complaint made to council that a delivery of fuel was taken in the middle of the night, and the management of the service station needed to respond to that and wanted to deal with that issue. The speaker was right in saying that the application was born predominantly from the restriction of hours of delivery of fuel, which have been historically 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. from about 2007. There were comments made about the fuel delivery driver, which has nothing to do with the management of the service station other than delivering the fuel, his actions, etc., that were mentioned. The management of the service station wanted to take on board the issues that had been raised to them via the council with the complaints for noise, and their fuel delivery arrangements with the drivers had told them that 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. is simply too restrictive for them, specifically with Helensburgh being located on the fringe of Sydney metropolitan area in between Sydney and Wollongong. They can't always make it down in that time frame, and there were events that happened at the port which had held up fuel being available to these fuel truck drivers, which is why sometimes on rare occasions they'd come in outside of these hours. So to address these issues, we wanted to put in an application. At the same time, the management of the service station recognise that occasionally when the light is still on but the fuel station has closed down, people are knocking on the door looking for, I don't know the specifics, whether it was a pie or milk or whatever it was, people are wanting the service of the convenience store when other stores are shut. There's a limited range availability of stores in Helensburg. One of the neighbours rightly commented that it's growing rapidly. The report states that Helensburg is growing rapidly. There's 6,000 people, and there would be a potential need for the convenience of the items that are available inside the store. We undertook an acoustic survey, and we provided council with an acoustic report. They looked at that in a lot of detail and actually came back with further questions about that report, and the consultants came back and answered those to the satisfaction of council. And basically, the outcome of the report was that there were issues between 10 a.m. and 5 a.m, but only for the delivery of the fuel. The operation of the premises, there would be no issue in terms of the acoustics, and therefore they stated that we should have a restriction between 10 a.m. and 5 a.m. Council have taken that a step further and have contracted those hours, and my client's quite happy with the recommendation. They're happy to compromise on the hours that were originally requested, and we wanted to emphasise that these hours of operation are not to push fuel deliveries to 10 p.m. every night of the week, or however often they come, once or twice a week. The operator would prefer that they come in the quiet periods outside of the peak periods so that they're not inconveniencing their customers, but on odd occasions the fuel may have to come in a bit later or a bit earlier. And they want that to be part of the legal for the site to operate, conditions of consent, so that that they can run their business legally and not have fuel tankers arriving. Obviously, if a fuel tanker, if this is approved today with these conditions of consent, which my client's happy with, then they will obviously be made available to the fuel tank delivery people. That gives them a lot wider scope to deliver the fuel, and they'll be cutting out any after-hour deliveries. On occasions, if that happens and they're wanting to deliver at 2 a.m, the actual service station has to shut down, like shut down the pumps that no longer have fuel, and they will be accepting of that if they can receive them in you know, the slightly extended hours to what they've asked for.
Couple of questions.
Yes.
Do you know how many deliveries of fuel there are a week?
Not off the top of my head, but it's not every day, and I don't think it's not in my report here in front of me.
Does council know?
But it was actually dealt with in the acoustic report.
That's why I'm asking the question. Yes, that's what I would have thought.
Obviously, it's based on consumption of the different types of fuel.
Well, I suppose, okay, look, leaving that aside, was the acoustic testing done on the truck type that delivers the petrol?
And my understanding was that it is. I didn't Google up myself the... I understand that the neighbour Googled what type of trucks deliver the fuel and looked at the report. My understanding is that the acoustic consultant found out what size trucks delivered the fuel, and they were put into the model.
Fuel? Three times a week. large truck 3 times a week. That seems a lot for a... makes me question whether it's a small truck, a small truck as opposed to a more contemporary, bigger truck. Or, I don't know.
Well, I think it also is the type of fuel, like the truck is delivering a certain type of fuel.
Yeah.
So when they're becoming low, then that truck delivers super, supreme, whatever it is, and then...
diesel or whatever.
Yeah, that's it.
Sorry, the tankers, they have divisions in compartments.
So they deliver all the different fuels at the one time?
That's how they work. If you empty one compartment, you still have two.
Of separate types of fuel.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I don't know. Depends which truck, I suppose.
They're full-size tankers. They're not many tankers. They're full-size tankers.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've witnessed tankers delivering fuel. They're always the big ones. I've never seen small ones at any service station, so I understand.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
And on that basis, we've got no other matters. I'll close the meeting, clear the room, and we'll make some decisions. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm not sure what the protocol is. Do we bow?
No, you do not bow.